Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
Yeah. It's like you wanted to say something. No, the train thought otherwise.
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And Barrett Scher.
Hi there.
We're here with writer-director Danielle Lesovitz, who has done a movie called Port Authority. It's in theaters May 28th and digital and on-demand June 1st. Danielle, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. You've made a movie that focuses on the relationship between a transgender woman and a man, and it doesn't make transgender the focus of the movie. Getting into the genesis of this movie and everything, did your screenwriter brain want to make that an issue, or were you determined not to make it an issue?
It's funny. I was pretty determined from the outset to make it not an issue. I feel like there's more to a person of trans experience than that experience, that there's a deeper, richer humanity that I haven't felt represented on screen yet, like just the pleasure of getting to be a person, if that makes any sense, was something that I felt was needed or necessary. I didn't want to delve into the pain of that. I feel like there are other ways of showing that experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a non-issue, but it's not the central conflict of the movie, which I think a lot of times is what we would see. I think even The Crying Game way back in 1992 I don't know if it went like that. I mean, it did make it a real huge central focus with a huge surprise and everything in it. But I think it feels like we've come a little bit farther since The Crying Game. Do you think that's true, or is it?
Yeah, I think in 2021, especially, it's not, nor should it be shocking, if someone, declares themselves to be of trans experience, right? It's like we had this idea of like, oh, it used to be one person going from one gender to the other gender. And I think hopefully that conversation has been muted to some extent. And it's not about going from one gender to another gender. It's about honoring a kind of disconnection between your sort of physicality and how you choose to, or not choose to, but who you know yourself to be somehow, and understanding that the two don't necessarily have to inform each other.
Yeah. At the center of this, you have two amazing leads and, of course, a great supporting cast, too. Tell us how you came about finding your leads and your surrounding cast and everything. And tell me how awesome it must have been to work with them.
Yeah, it was really, really awesome. I mean, for sure, both Finn and Lena brought with every take and every moment something kind of very new and fresh and from themselves. So there was like that deep connection to kind of a lived experience that they had that affected them, that they were somehow pulling from or drawing from in the performances. So it was really just incredible to watch them on set, and watching Landon in particular, who we hadn't seen, or I hadn't seen doing scene work before. Scene. There's a lot of scenes in that sentences, but like I hadn't seen act before in front of a camera, nor had anyone else really. It was like a revelation, you know, it was just like watching some, hopefully, actor's career being born in front of you, because she was just so alive and so magical. No, magical is not the word. Sorry. She was just very alive and evocative and powerful, I would say. So with Lena, the odyssey for finding why was pretty long. It was about a year and a half of meeting with every like trans woman of color that I could find. And this was also just interviewing like many generations too. So older women, younger kids, and just trying to understand the variations and the nuances of what those, you know, what that experience is like for a lot of people. And sort of hoping to find the right person along the way. Lena was in Italy when we started. So I didn't actually get to meet her until a year into it, when she decided to come to the US, fortunately. And I sort of played opposite to her. So I played Paul in some of the auditions. And it was just, she was just so responsive and like open. And I really felt she was listening to me in the scenes. And from that, I, you know, had no doubts that she was like the person to play this role. Similarly with Finn, didn't get to meet him until a few days before set in person, but was just really encouraged and surprised. He's an insane actor, in the sense of like just how he can transform in the blink of an eye into something, you know, powerful also, and poetic. And yeah, he's just incredible to work with. So that's sort of the story of that. Yeah.
So it seems like Lena Bloom, to me, I think she's one of the most beautiful women on the planet. But she's also, when you have that that ball scene where she walks, I guess I forget the category, face or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing how she describes it. You just have to own everything, and she nails it. Does she have a background in this culture?
Yeah, she came up in it. So she's from Chicago, and she really came up in it. She's also a dancer. She's a classically trained dancer, like so ballet, and you kind of put those together, and yeah, you see how she's just like a fish in water in these moments. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I love that backdrop of the ballroom scene, though, because that was not something I was familiar with. So I looked into it a little bit while I was watching this movie, and it was just it's fascinating. So I thought that was just the perfect backdrop.
Yeah, I think it's really incredible. And I also just think this idea of chosen family, this idea of like people finding different ways of connecting with each other that are real and honest and sort of embody the true kind of roles we can play in each other's lives, in a way that isn't, how do you say, fixed or inherited. I find it to be like, in some ways, I don't know, for me anyways, what makes me kind of proud to be American is that this culture exists.
Especially with just, if you're on social media a lot or whatever, it's just the idea that there's a community that's this inviting is unfortunately feels a little alien, you know, in the current state. So that I love that part of the movie, especially.
Yeah. It's true. There's an openness, but also a protection, a necessary protection that I think is there. And it was important for me to show at the end of the film, like Paul sort of being judged by them and knowing that if he were to be accepted, which the film doesn't really answer, it's not that he would have a place of like high status in the community. Like he would be on the lowest rung possible. And I think that's important to show somehow, that even, you know, he's not automatically ushered in and he's asking permission, and his inclusion isn't automatic, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
How did the story come about? What was the inspiration for it?
That's a big question. it's always one of those things. I was having a lot of difficulty understanding what it meant to be American. I didn't feel like I spent a lot of time in Italy or other places, and I felt like, for me anyways, the U.S. lacked a kind of culture that brought people together in a certain way. Like, of course, we're allowed to have our own individual uniques and beliefs and da-da-da-da-da, and it's very sort of pluralistic in this way, ideally. But I felt like if you're not born into a family that's supportive or where you feel like you belong, where do you find your sense of belonging? And I felt that this is a question that we all kind of have to ask ourselves, and some people arrive to the answer and other people don't. And they, you know, end up isolated, you know, maybe online in weird groups, or maybe, you know, identifying with hate as a way to feel connected or a sense of belonging. And I just felt like this was a very dangerous and sort of polarizing way to move forward as a place and as a culture, where you kind of almost have to double down on some sort of weird identity that may or may not be something that you're responsible for, like, you know, how you look or, you know, race and gender and all of these things. So wanted to create a film that explored what it means to not belong, even though you have the social signifiers of belonging. Because the culture that you live in might not be geared towards sort of a deeper type of inclusion or a deeper humanity, if that makes any sense. And then there's specific particulars of that, like having gone to a ball and having a big, powerful experience there. You know, having to deal with my own stuff in terms of childhood nonsense, my own journey into belonging, I guess, informed a lot of this as well. Yeah.
You touched a little bit on the family aspect here. I think this is a huge, huge theme of this movie, especially since Paul seems to always find the wrong family to be in, and Y finds what is the perfect family for her and everything. Can you touch more on the family theme, or have we already discussed everything about it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of us, you know, how do you say, like, it feels like ballroom culture is like just kind of the dream, and where you can choose, you know, who you want your mom to be, who you want your dad to be, who you want your siblings to be. And I grew up with just a single mom, and I'm just an only child in Kansas City, and sort of this, like, in government housing, really. Like, so, for me, the idea of what is a family was always just like in the back of my head, because I felt I don't know what it is. But you have, I think we all have that need to have these connections and have these relationships. So what do you do again if you don't have them? And you know, and even if you have the most beautiful family, if they're not accepting of you, or if they're, you know, putting pressure on you to be someone you're not, then, you know, where do you go? So I think if we're honest with ourselves, we can all identify with you know, thinking that maybe that foundational sort of fabric of nuclear family isn't always what we need. if that makes any sense in terms of finding this
absolutely.
Belonging. Yeah.
God, this is the most like thoughtful conversation we've ever had on this show. It's
is that okay for you guys?
It's making me uncomfortable.
Really?
No, it's making me very uncomfortable.
Oh, hey, no.
I do have one.
Let's talk about it.
Can I ask? No. I want to ask you a specific question.
Sure.
The character of Lee,
yeah,
is pervasive throughout the movie. I have conflicted feelings about him. Obviously,
awesome.
First of all, was that what you intended? And second of all, can you tell me what you think of that character?
Let's see. Lee was written as someone who is a bit darker than I think what he ended up being, but I think that that's interesting to me. It was a discussion McCall and I had, and he just became sort of lighter, and maybe that has a sort of sinister aspect to it too. Just very charming. And someone who has his own kind of vulnerabilities and desires. So I felt like he became more dimensional, I think, throughout the filming process. I've been around a lot of guys like Lee personally. So I don't know that are sort of, they're like the, at least for me, is like, they're those guys or those friends that you really look up to. And you think they're amazing and they're really charming and they walk into a room and they kind of get what they want. But then you spend more time and you realize there's a kind of darkness to that, and an ability to exploit other people in a way that just feels almost too natural. And then you realize that there isn't much to do about it, you know, like that's just how things are. And you gotta like either... separate yourself or, you know, but you wish, you know, at least for me, is like, you wish you could say something or you wish you could do something about it, but you can't. So that's own. And I don't think Lee's a bad guy. I just think the world allows, you know, the world he is living in is allowing isn't encouraging in a way, you know?
Yeah. Because he saves Paul, right? Like, I mean, at least in the beginning,
he does. And he has a way of, you know, again, with all of, you know, with every, say, dictator in the world. I mean, I think it's like it's like Foucault is like, you also have to recognize that they're also providing a lot to the people that they're, you know, they're providing protection. And without them, you don't know what would happen. So it's not necessarily irrational. And it's not like, I don't find it. It's just a thing, you know, it's a thing. And if society, I don't know, didn't make room for that or have a need for that, it wouldn't exist somehow. So Paul is protected by Lee I don't know. I try not to judge too much because I don't think it's helpful. But I do think Lee's a person I know, you know, and I think we all know.
Maybe
we've all been Lee at a certain point in our lives. I'm not sure, but I do think questioning one's sort of that's that kind of dominance, you know, and whether or not it's something to be valued is important. Is an important process to go through.
Right.
I don't know. Does that make is your discomfort with Lee's character? I'm curious.
Oh, I tell you what, first of all, it's played beautifully by McCall Lombardi.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Writing that line. I felt myself like being annoyed with myself for liking the guy at times, specifically the time where he helps Paul up the stairs after he's gotten smashed that night. And you're like, oh, he's not that bad. And then you think about his actions earlier in the movie. No, he's objectively an asshole, but you find yourself kind of, I mean, it's exactly how you described. I know this guy too. And it's just played, like you said, dimensionally to where it's not just black and white.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think
that's it though. I think, sorry.
No, keep going.
I was going to say, no, I mean, I think you guys, what you two both are talking about, just the fact that we all know this person and have had to accept help from this person. Whether, you know, and it's just things like that. I think it just kind of, I don't know, makes it maybe, it kind of is a little more uncomfortable, but also kind of like I don't know, you can kind of understand it, I guess, a little better. And like Barrett was saying, that's the thing I loved about it, was it wasn't black and white. It was, you know, very much in that gray area with the character, and Lombardi, McCall Lombardi just played it so well.
Yeah, McCall's really brilliant.
That's why it's so complex too, when Y asks Paul, when Paul says, you can't see my friends because, you know, you wouldn't like them and you'd want to break up with me and everything. And then she says, well, why do you still hang out with them? I think it's a question that I think almost everybody I know, and especially, and it's definitely me, could ask that same question about certain people in their lives, because they sometimes they do terrible things, but they've also helped you out in life and everything like that. That's why I think that that's probably one of the most poignant moments of the movie for me, was when she asked that question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What do you do in those situations? It's true. It's true. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. It's lovely having this conversation.
I have yeah, absolutely. There's a scene that I want to deconstruct a little bit, because I think it's the one that really drew me into this. It's when Y and Paul go out on the terrace and they start talking and they really start opening up to each other. I don't know if it was the restraints of where you were filming, or if it was sort of a planned type of thing, but I love how this shot is framed, because it's not your typical head. Like, you don't, your headroom's a little bit bigger than normal, but you're cutting off characters here and there. And it seems like there's a more intimate shot being composed out of it. Can you tell me about that scene?
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to shoot it on these stairs, because I think in New York, like, a lot of, I don't know, at least for me, a lot of time is spent on these sort of emergency staircases and fire mm-hmm. I don't even know what the name of them are, but fire escape. But it was, you know, we were really high up, those were tiny stairs, and you know, you can have as many desires as you want, but can you actually, like, the reality is it's really hard to shoot on fire escapes. Right. So the coverage was pretty limited. You know, I wanted them to feel connected. So I didn't want to necessarily shoot single and then cut it together. So it became a kind of trial and error. And I'm just being honest. Like, it just, we shot it and we're like, okay, what do we do now? What do we do now? And you know, fortunately, there were some birds that we could cut away to in certain moments. you know?
Yeah.
It was like this. And I don't know how Finn and Lana did it, because there's noises all around them. They're like five stories up on these, like, very precarious looking stairs, and they were able to kind of hold their composure. Yeah. So that's that story. Yeah.
Okay. It's funny to me, because it sounds like you were bound to the limitations of where you were filming, but at the same time, I feel like you got exactly what you wanted out of that scene.
That makes me feel so good. That was the scene that, like, I sent to the editor immediately, who was on a different project, and I was like, does this even cut together? You know, that was the only scene where I was like, I don't even know if this is gonna make it. And he was like, yeah, it'll cut together. So it's reassuring.
Yeah.
Another scene like that was at the train, you know, where you have trains passing by, and, you know, and she's trying to, like, scream over the trains. I do think sometimes when you embrace, you know, you embrace that the world contains you in certain ways, and you just let it do its thing, it kind of, you know, it captures that experience. So
that's the perfect New York moment, or in my experience, Chicago moment, where it's so real. Like, there's no way, even in this emotionally intense moment, you got to let that shit pass.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to go out the window.
Yeah. It's like, you wanted to say something. No, the train thought otherwise. No.
Guys, anything else? I think we're running up against it.
Well, I know, but I have a very specific question, a screenwriting question. One of my favorite scenes in this film is the hallway scene where Finn or Paul comes up and he's looking for Y after they've had a confrontation. And Mother McQueen, the kind of head of the household, comes out and against Y's wishes, basically, kind of talks him down. That speech that he gives is one of the most beautiful things, one of the most real things that I've seen on film in a while.
Yeah.
Was that on the page, or was that something that he kind of came from the heart from him?
It's interesting. I think it's a combination of both. That scene was written, I think, a week before we were supposed to shoot it. So it wasn't in the original script.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It kind of came. I felt like I needed that moment somehow. And I had, you know, even Africa, who plays like the mother of the house, wasn't also a character in the film originally. But when he auditioned, I just saw the kind of advice that he was giving people. Like, I think I said, like, could you just give advice to someone here in this room? And he did. And it was just so spot on. And the person was just, you know, I don't know, like crying, but just like overwhelmed by how precise and helpful it was. So yeah, I think it was just knowing Africa and, you know, listening to him and thinking about what he might say and then talking to him. And yeah, it kind of came into being that way, and just things I wanted to say too. So it was a collaboration in that way, and something that spontaneously happened a little bit prior to,
wow,
to when we shot it. Yeah.
It comes off so objectively. Like it's crazy. Like, it seems like more people need to be talked to this way when they're having struggles like this, because there's no, like, you know, there's no like huge emotion behind it, like, get the hell out of here, you know, blah 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 blah. He lays down just sheer facts.
Yeah.
and you know, and doesn't say it in a way that would hurt somebody or anything. That's a magic trick to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that scene as well.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
We would like to thank Danielle Lesovitz for her time. The movie is Port Authority. Comes out in theaters May 28th, digital and on demand on June 1st. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson, Jonathan Watkins, and Barrett Scherer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.